been a primary author of two of the largest tax cuts in the history of our state.
Let the eagle soar.
Son, go outside and dust yourself off. And when you feel good again, come back in and talk to me. We know what they would have done because we know what they did.
Hero. I've been there. Hero.
We are going to fight for Missouri values. We are going to defend life. And we are going to protect our constitutional rights.
What I am trying to do to simply make tomorrow just a little bit better than today.
Welcome to another episode of the Hashtag MoLedge podcast, recorded live every week from the Missouri State Capitol. This is Rachel Herndon Dunn, editor of the Missouri Times, here with my lovely co-host, Becky Lohman of the Catalyst Group, and of course, Ben Peters of the Missouri Times is judging me in the corner. First things first, I want to thank the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce and Republic Services for making this production possible. Second, I want to introduce our lovely guest who is letting us hang out in his lovely rearranged office, Ryan Nonnemaker, Chief of Staff to Senator Bob Onder. Welcome, Ryan.
Thank you.
So, obviously, this is one of the first things I always like to ask people, but what is your journey? How did you get to the chair that you're sitting in today?
He's like, well, I was born on
1980.
We just got an age reveal on the MoLedge podcast. That's right. Yeah. You're going to be standing alone on that.
That's
one.
Fine. I only have a little bit of gray hair. And that's from working in this building. But my wife points out, you're going gray again. Started working for a marketing firm out of college and met my. Well, I guess I worked with my wife there and then worked in Indianapolis for the Coalition for Homelessness and came back, went to grad school, and just kind of by accident met Rod Jetton and did some...
You just met Rod out in Indianapolis?
No, no. Okay, when I came back and was in grad school. This is campaign season. I was in grad school and working on my master's in communications and... needed some help. He did press releases, all the stuff he did with his campaign side, and met a fellow named Jason Crow, and decided that he would hire me as his legislative director, and spent 3.5 years there with Jason Crow. A lot of fun times working for him, and then I got hired by. Senator Mayer, as he was pro temp for the caucus, spent some time there as policy director under Mayer, and then Senator Dempsey. So it's my second senator from St. Charles that I've reported to, and then got married, and my wife said I need to come back home, so I took a job with the railroads and worked in their grassroots organization called Go Rail. Covered 9 states from California, Texas, Kansas, Missouri, South, basically. My wife thinks that I went to New Orleans to party instead of actually work because I had Louisiana. So you need to go to New Orleans, whatever. And then with the turnover and election and Janae, heading over to the governor's office, I got a call from Senator Onder, and we hit it off, and here I am.
You have a pretty interesting track record of the men you have worked with.
I was just going to say, especially in intelligence. Obviously, Senator Onder is exceptionally bright, insanely intelligent, and as you know, I've heard the same about Jason Crow specifically.
Absolutely.
So what is it like working for just that high level of an IQ?
Yeah, arguably in recent times, I'd say those are probably two of the smartest. There are a lot of smart people
right.
who've come through the Senate.
But just the general consensus.
I work for a lawyer and a doctor right now. it's challenging at times. I get lots of quotes from books, and I feel like I haven't read enough working for Senator Onder. It's like all he does is read, and same with Senator Crowell, and that was one of his expertise is reading every bill and knowing everything in it. So when I worked for Senator Crowell, especially, and now with Senator Onder, it's like reading everything and making sure you get what every line in the bill, because Crowell, he'd find something. I'm like, I read that bill 3 times and never saw that. And Senator Onder is the same way. So it's actually fun. It pushes me. It keeps me on my toes, and never a dull moment. The other thing is both of them, you know, a lot of senators have their issues, and when that issue's not on the floor, they're not involved. Jason Crowell and Bob Onder both are involved in almost every issue. There's very few that they're not involved in, and so it's a jack of jack of all trades, master of none. So I kind of feel like sometimes in my position is, you know, I need to know a little bit about everything in case.
And then you need to know a lot about something.
Yeah,
too.
then something pops up like Becky's Stancy bill or this recent special session. Learned a lot. You know, of the side of abortion that I never knew about, or pregnancy resource centers, and you know, I was not around during the Sanctity of Life meetings, so I had to scramble the big binders from all those meetings, and so very happy special session's over. I feel like you know, I've been a step behind this whole special session, but you know, I'll never catch up with Senator Onder on medical terms. I feel like I need a medical dictionary with me, because he'll start
like a pocket-sized medical dictionary.
You ask about how to pronounce Nonamaker, he'll start talking, and I'm like, I can't even pronounce
like,
the
like
name.
Of what you're saying. Have a conversation.
You know, I think it's interesting. Not only is I actually end up typing out the list, because it's pretty impressive. Like, that's amazing to have hung out with those guys and live to tell about it. but more so, these men, they talk about bellwether districts, about whether seats are flipping. These are kind of bellwether legislators. Whenever I try to look back at what was going on whenever, like, Crowell was around, I will look for articles about what Crowell was doing, what he was saying, more than I will other people. And even today, like yesterday, I went into the Senate, which is not my beast to tame. It's totally Ben's, and he loves it, I'm sure. I always look for a Senator Onder, because you can figure out what's going on, what's about to happen, just by his body language.
Yeah, he's always in the mix.
So.
That's, you know, I have a drawer full of all the bills, and you gotta read, and, you know, I learned that from Crowell. I mean, he literally read every bill, and he had a knack for just reading it and getting it. And that's just a testament to his brains, and then his mastery of Senate rules. And you know, the thing that I always looked for with Crowell was an end game. I know that he often got labeled as obstructionist and probably other words we can't say publicly, but. But it was always, you know, a strategy of things. He had a list that he was working on, and how do we accomplish that? And then he was always looking, and this something that I didn't say about both of them. They're always looking, you know, 5 different things ahead. I like to say they're playing chess. Well, I'm playing checkers, but it's a testament to their brains of, you know, this isn't just a single subject game during regular session. Now, during special session or extraordinary session, since we were called by the governor, but, you know, that's a little different ball game. But during regular session, there's so many moving pieces that they were always able to see, or Bob currently is always able to see the pieces that are going to move as the dominoes start falling.
So here's my question. Obviously, you've been in the building, you mm-hmm. stepped away, and now you're back. How is it different? Or is it pretty much the same? We have been always building up to see the Senate where it is now. What's the difference there? And why do you think that is?
I mean, I'm going to go with term limits to start with. Now, I think it's been thrown out a little too much about a certain level of, you know, camaraderie, and that's why term limits are the problem. Part of it, I think that you're here such a short time, you don't mind being obstructionist. You don't mind whatever you feel your role is when you come in. Probably when the struggles Senator Onder has a very heavy lift of agendas, and that's not lift as in a car, that's a pickup. Make sure not to confuse Uber and Lyft there. So when you're trying to move heavy agendas, it's sometimes difficult. But I think that the Senate was created, at least my personal views, to slow the process down, to make sure that we're not rushing into things. And that's fine. And an average of 3 years is usually what I say in my head, from introduction to actually getting something across the finish line. Because
tell my clients that?
Yeah.
I'll make them listen to the podcast.
And I'm not saying that that's a good thing or a bad thing. There are times it's good and times that... but there's a lot of education that comes into play. And getting, a majority of people educated and move it through, on the Senate side, is a difficult task. And, I came in 2009 was my first session. Tax credits, for example, people still are being educated on what those are, how they work, and how, in my opinion, out of control they've become. And even if we can come to a consensus that we need to look at reforming them, then it's what does that reform look like? So it's not just a flip of a switch of, well, tax credits fixed. but there's a lot of education.
It would take about 83 pages to do that.
Yeah.
You know.
when they redid the criminal codes, Senator Dixon, I think the first time they dropped that bill, it was like 600 pages. It was huge. I mean, you're reforming the
everything,
whole.
Right.
It was, but those, I think we were getting in the caucus office like 3 copies of each bill. I think we told, no, we don't, we just need one.
Oh my goodness.
There's no reason to waste that much paper. But,
no kidding.
There's some institutional knowledge has been lost. And to go back to your original question, I want to point to Terry Spieler not being here. Adrian does a great job, but Terry Spieler, I mean, even the most Jason Crowell, Terry Spieler said it. It was law. You know, our rules have a lot of unspoken things in them that Terry Spieler, I mean, she would double check and look what precedent was, but if Terry Spieler said it, that was law. There was no debate, and I believe Adrian will be that at some point in time, and as some of the senators who term out and new ones come in, they'll look to Adrian, and I believe we'll be in that situation again. I'm not... But Terry was, I'd go to her all the time. What's this? What's the rule on this? And she'd tell me, okay. I just took it just like God spoke to me. But a lot of those things, I'm never going to be against term limits, but sometimes I wonder if our term limits could have been restructured. Whereas, 16 years, why we picked 8, that was before I could vote when they enacted term limits. So I don't know why that ballot initiative picked 8, but, part of me is like, if you just said 16 in the Capitol period, whether you spend all 16 there, 16 here, 8 and 8, sometimes I wonder if that helped with institutional knowledge just a little bit more. Some days I look at senators and I'm like, I've been here longer than you. I know.
Yeah, you have some really brilliant staffers that have been here for a long time. Uh-huh. The media, lobbyists, you know. Mm-hmm. Those are the folks that have been here for years.
That doesn't mean that I want to be a senator or that they're not smarter than me. I've been around. Yeah, no. I'll also be announcing my divorce as I announce my candidacy.
That's going to be my teaser. I'm going to be like, big announcement from Ryan Nonamaker to get a bunch of people to do a lot of traffic.
No.
You know, I think it's interesting that you mention the short time kind of gives some lawmakers cause to be obstructionists. And in the last 24 hours, I've heard from a few different senators that after yesterday, which was extraordinary session of wrapping up, that more than ever, they are feeling being obstructionist. Is that something you're looking forward to? if at least keep your job a little bit more entertaining. Well, clearly,
I don't think that's a problem for me.
I don't need more entertainment.
He's got his fill.
Yeah. I don't mind in the Senate people slowing the process down if there's an endgame. If it's just to be an obstructionist, and I get the minority without the governor to back him up, has to play a certain role, and that's good. I think that's why the Senate is a good spot to have good debates. But just to obstruct, to do it, is a lot different than to come to a conclusion. Now, again, I get that there's going to be some policy beliefs that you don't want. For example, Senator Shoup, I understand. She probably didn't want the bill that passed yesterday to pass at all. And so, she does have an end goal when she's being an obstructionist there. I don't like it. I'd rather move on, but that's because I was supportive of the bill. Senator Onder was a big proponent in helping write that bill. So, an end game, I understand, but just to say, hey, I'm going to obstruct to be obnoxious is a whole different. And that's going back to my Jason Crow days. You know, I think a lot of people thought he was just being obnoxious, but he actually had an end game where he was going with it all, and sometimes even I didn't see it, and I worked with the man, and I'm like, what? No consent calendar when Crowell. I mean,
I heard someone in leadership say that you never tell anybody your priorities. Mm-hmm. So even though maybe to me sitting in the gallery or you sitting in the gallery, it seems like just an obstructionist movement. Mm-hmm. I feel like usually there is an end game, although maybe it's 20 steps away. That's but someone true. Said, never tell anybody your priorities. And, you know, I thought it was kind of a brilliant thing to
You know, that kind of makes sense the more I think about it.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people have an end game. It just isn't obvious to us, or we don't maybe like what they're doing. But I think most have an end game. I won't say all, but most of the time.
And Becky and I, your client, worked... she learned that kind of the hard way because the speaker had put one of his priorities, it was the TNC bill, and it got held hostage for some time because other senators wanted some other things. And one thing that hasn't changed is the games between the House and the Senate.
Different players.
You think supermajorities, now a Republican governor. Oh, can't we all just work together and plot everything out? And I think there was some effort to have that happen. And that went out the window, I think, the second day of session. And so those games still exist. And the House has their role. We have our role. And, that's part of what makes this an interesting job.
Well, and I think that goes to term limits too, because people don't realize this has been the role of the House and Senate for decades and decades, probably before we were all born, but nobody sees that, so it seems very much like this is the worst it's ever been, the fighting is crazy, but that's not the case. I don't think so.
I mean, there is literally a governor
historical
we had a governor for a while who was insane, and I'm so grateful that Twitter didn't exist whenever he was governor, but Governor Boggs, his portrait isn't downstairs. So I'm thinking there might have been some, the worst it ever was. Let's put that in quotes
right,
then.
Right, but everybody sort of being fresh to the building thinks this is, you know.
Yeah, and granted, this is like 100 years ago that I'm talking about.
Right, I was like, no comment.
Rachel's nerding again.
And I believe, it, you know, like Kit Bond would come up in the evenings and drink with Democratic pro tem and have drinks and sit and smoke cigars. And I mean, there's no smoking in this building. but, you know, that was a different day. And, Twitter kind of, you know, I can get live updates without ever having to leave my desk.
Yes. Yeah. You know, it's kind of funny, and as an aside, because you were kind of talking about how Terry Spieler, the former Senate Secretary, kind of maintained a lot of the traditions that could have been lost with term limits because of the loss of institutional knowledge. But this past year, with all the different motions and all the different changes in leadership, literally and statewide, it's really been a crash course for the new Secretary, Adrienne Kraus.
Yeah, and I'm not... She's doing a fine job.
Oh, yeah, no, she's doing a great job.
But Terry was around before term limits, you know, as the term limits hit, and I'll use Jason Crow's example, you know, he came in because of term limits. Peter Kinder was termed out. I think Peter only served 8 years too because of term limits. So Crow comes in, yeah, he reads the rule book, but it's silent in a lot of areas, and so you go and you talk. And well, you know, with the turnover, you know, it's kind of like having new senators. You have a new Secretary of the Senate, and she's been around a long time, too. But it's just figuring it out. And I'm not going to take away the strategy of creating some chaos. I mean, now, it bugs me because we had an agenda. We'd like to a couple bills that died on the vine. But... that's just, you know, part of the strategy. And I hope that through some education, some of the places that are silent, we can go back to what I saw happen in my first go around working in the Senate. I think that benefits the body as a whole, especially for the floor leader, some of those. But until a majority of senators, I'm just a chief staff, so until a majority of senators, all I can do is run the play that's called, not, and like I said, I have no interest in being,
reiterate. Yeah.
My brother was the one who was in the plays and on stage. I wanted to be in the pit and the band, you know. I'd rather be heard, not seen, so, no.
Well, speaking of yourself, are you ready for five questions.
Okay. Question one.
No.
Did you guys sound more ominous when you said that?
Yeah.
We try to make it, because they're really not scary, so I think we try to have build-up, and then it's a pleasant experience, generally.
We're the most suspenseful people we've ever met. For
those, since nobody was here before, they actually typed them in front of me. But I couldn't see them.
Yes,
but all the typing makes me nervous. Yeah. It's like,
I'm like, ooh, this is where we're going to get him. This is the gotcha question. Okay, first question. Hopefully not a gotcha question. What annoying habit do you or Mrs. Nonamaker think that you have that our listeners wouldn't know? What's your most annoying habit?
Well, Mrs. Nonamaker, she probably has a list.
We can get her call. We can call her.
Yeah, phone a friend. Need to call her. Where are they? I must. Oh, here they are. I chew
Ryan's
on straws.
Looking for his desk. Okay.
Oh,
straw.
Oh, no.
And
you don't just chew straws. You chew straws that you just find in your desk.
I keep straws in my desk. That's what you said.
This is my personal ones. I did not steal from taxpayer dollars.
Oh.
But
I thought you had special straws.
Well, they're coffee straws.
Yeah.
But I go to Walmart and I buy.
You buy packs of straws specifically.
And why my wife will say it's annoying is then I'll put them in my pocket and they'll fall out. So she'll find them around the house too. And now I have a 2-year-old.
There's like I'll know how to find you in the Senate next. There'll be a trail of straws.
We'll be walking out of the house and she'll go, "You have a straw behind your ear." So I think that's what she'd say is my most annoying habit.
That's a fun
fact. It probably is. I try not to do it in public too much, but if I stop at McDonald's or anywhere and afterwards.
You ask for extra straws.
No, well, I don't ask, but after I finish my drink.
You drink your soda and pull it out. Throw it away the drink. Yeah, that's straw.
My drive to and from Lee Summit, I usually have a straw.
That's so interesting.
That's awesome.
So, but yes, Mrs. Nonamaker would say.
Okay, second question. So I'm sure there's a ton of other chiefs of staff that you like working with. Who's one of your favorite that you work with?
I want to suck up to.
In game.
That's probably. I don't have multiple children, but that's like asking me what's my favorite barbecue in Kansas City. The Senate is.
Not your favorite, but who have you worked with?
I know.
Lately,
I guess I was getting to the Senate's a family of sorts. And so a lot of. You'll watch two bosses, two senators argue out there, and the two chiefs of staff can sit next to each other and laugh. And for example, Don Thalhuber, guy's got a brain that causes the majority tons of problems, and I enjoy sitting and talking to him for a good hour out on the Senate floor. So, there is a camaraderie around chiefs of staff, so picking just one is tough. Maybe Adam, since he and Senator Kiko picked what's going on the floor, and I'll suck up to him. No, I like Adam. Adam's been around a long time. He was here when I first started and moved from the caucus to Senator Kehoe. So, man, he's been here 10 years plus. And Pat Thomas, I love working with her. She's always fun, and she'll tell you what she's thinking.
I respect that.
I was very happy whenever she started being cool, being on the record.
And I know you stated chiefs of staff. It's, I think, the biggest underrated position in Senate is Tekla for our office, but the gatekeeper, because they have the most difficult job. I really think that they have a more difficult job than I do. Yeah, I have to deal with what's going on the floor and strategy, but they're getting constituent calls, they're getting Becky and clients, and reporters who are wanting to see the boss, and she's got to read the boss's mood. Is this a good time? Is this not? Do I pull him off the floor? And then, and constituents are mad, and it's nothing that the senator did. It's probably a department that they're having trouble with. So
yeah, I always think they can't run and hide. Right? No. They are the gatekeepers. So
and,
they don't get to go
so
close the door to their office.
There's so many around the building, some of them who've worked for multiple, but they are the true warriors of the building and really keep the office running. I call them the true bosses because and they're great people.
Question 3. Favorite, it's a 2-part question. Favorite sport to watch, favorite sport to play?
Well, it's both baseball, but since I've added 40 pounds since my baseball years, it's now softball. No.
Okay.
But I love baseball. Nope, my Kansas City Royals are seven game winning streak. And now, I don't want to hear it talked about on the Senate floor. But
why not? I was asking for it yesterday.
Oh. I forget what Senator Onder was holding the floor for one evening, but I texted him. In his district, he has not a minor league team, it's an independent league team. And I texted him. I looked at it, I Googled it, and texted him. You should start talking about it's O'Fallon something. And he doesn't know anything about their record or anything, so I couldn't talk about it. Just seems like.
Question 4. What is your favorite thing about working for Senator Onder?
I think it's being involved in so many aspects that are going on. There's no sitting on the bench for a certain bill. He's involved. His knowledge, I know we talked about that earlier, I learn a lot And then what I don't know, I gotta go learn and figure it out and then be ready to assist him. That, and he's a great guy just to sit and chat with and have a conversation and you know, Crow and Senator Onder were both great bosses. And so Senator Onder, you know, always thankful for what we do, and he's a hard worker, demands hard work, but you know, I'd rather that than sit here and do nothing.
Well, I don't think that's probably in your
future.
Last question. Dinner with one politician, politico, dead or alive?
They're alive.
Governor Boggs.
I was going to say,
what?
It's a Governor Boggs.
No.
I'll need to do some research on that.
Quick answer would be, I'm going to go to dinner with Donald Trump and see if I can steal his phone so he'd stop tweeting.
Oh.
I love that answer.
But, historically, I'd love to, somebody, a founding father, probably Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, one of them, and really... I'd love to have my Back to the Future time machine, bring them to 2017 and be like, "What is this? What you imagined America looking like when you wrote the Constitution?" And
I don't know if I want to know that answer. Well,
I mean, I guess I said no. Like, they did the Boston Tea Party, their tea tax was like 1%. We got a 7% sales tax, and then like overall is like a 30% tax. They would revolt.
Well,
second
one was counties. Do you think
Washington would be an obstructionist? Probably so. I imagine so.
No, I think it'd be interesting, and you know, depending on which founding father, they'd probably say yes or no, because we've moved to a stronger federal government from the Republic, but. You know, I just think it'd be interesting, and shoot, pick any inventor, I mean, U.S. politician, yeah. Bring it, you know, out a Graham Bell and say, hey, did you ever think that this would be a telephone? And I'm looking at my iPhone as I said, you know, radio. And, but politician-wise.
Those are good 5 questions.
Well, Ryan, thank you so much for joining us. Everyone listening, thank you for listening. Of course, thank you to our sponsors, Republic Services and the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Have a great day, everyone.